Welcome to the Valiant Central Podcast. We're back, baby. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Duan, I'm glad you made it back.
Yeah, I was on a baby-making mission, and I survived, and I made it back.
Did you make a baby?
It takes a little time to kind of figure out what's in the oven, things rise or not. Well, we were baking stuff. We were beating the bread.
I bet you were baking stuff in Jamaica.
We were baking stuff, dude.
we were baking things. We were adding ingredients. It takes ingredients to bake things. I found that out.
Oh, yes. I see. I see. I see what you mean.
Yes, sir.
It's good to have you guys back. Good to be back on the show. We are going to have a special episode, an all Psylords episode. I don't think we've ever done a themed episode on the show before. Not for a book, at least. So we have the new Psylords book by Fred Van Lente. We're going to talk about that, but we're also going to talk about the 1994, I believe it is, run of Psylords as well.
Yes, with the Valiant Vision.
With the Valiant Vision. Duan still has his glasses on.
Yes, I do.
Have you had your glasses on since 1994?
Yeah, it left a mark on my face. It did. It's still there.
Excellent.
The Valiant Vision glasses, like, it gets a weird effect. Like, just the light coming through it. So, like, you know, if you were, like, a little, like messed up, like, you know, you could have, like, a pretty fun time.
Yeah, you can. Yes, you can. Travis.
We know about that.
Go to, like, a rave or something, you know, yeah.
A rave, yes. Yes, that's what we will call it.
Was it a yellow, orange, and red rave?
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Do tell.
It's all PG, of course.
Yes, sir. Yes,
nothing sir. Ever happens at a rave, aside from dancing.
And foam parties.
Yes, and foam. Yes. And glow sticks.
It's so very true.
So, before we kick off a discussion, did you guys... I had two questions, actually. Number one, did you use your Valiant Vision glasses to look at the Psylords ad, the new book? And number two, did anyone try looking at reading the book with the Valiant Vision glasses on?
Not me. I didn't have time to dig in the crates for the Valiant Vision. But they've been on my face since 1994, so I figured if I looked at them on my iPad, I could see the 3D effect. But it kind of wore off over the time.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you. Travis, did you?
No, dude. I was wearing the Valiant Vision glasses this weekend when I was rereading the 90s series, but I didn't know whether it would work on the new series. Did you do it?
So I did not do it. So my glasses are in here somewhere because I did look at the ad a few weeks ago with my glasses on, and it does work. With the Psylords ad. The one that's got like the ghost image on the front. Mm-hmm. But then I went to a rave and I lost my Valiant Vision glasses.
Shame on you.
I know. So I reread the whole original run and I reread this issue. But I could not find my glasses. And the thing is, I know I have at least 3 pair of glasses. I just don't know where I put them.
So you didn't tuck them in? Like, okay, so back in the 90s, I bought 2... copies of the book, the issue 1 or whatever issue was it, issue 2 that had the glasses in it. I think it was issue 2.
The one with the destroyer, right? 2 or 3?
Was 3 with Chaos Effect.
With Chaos Effect.
So I bought that. I made sure I bought 2 issues. So it was one I opened up, just like the Superman run, so I can read it. And I'm like, okay. And another one I carefully tucked away. And that's what I was going to do. I was going to try to find the one I opened up to try to read this, but I was under a time crunch, between baby making duties and family coming in town. I couldn't go through my crates and find the glasses.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Fair enough. I forgive you.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All is well in the universe.
All is well. We should explain because I tweeted that we're going to talk about this on the show, And I had a couple people that didn't know read Valiant Comics that replied to my tweet. So we should explain what the Valiant Vision glasses are. They're kind of like the 3D glasses from way back in the day, where you had like one blue lens and one red lens. Except the Valiant Vision glasses aren't that. They're like prism lenses. So the reason the old school book has a lot of red, yellow, and orange is because those are the colors that pop out at you when you read the book through these glasses. All right, that's the explanation.
Yeah. Dude, like, the effect is pretty cool.
It's awesome, you know?
Like,
yeah.
Like, I was reading it with that yesterday, and, like, as a... The one thing, though, I'll admit is that it's very hard to make it work in a way that also artistically works with conventional coloring,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because, like, basically, it kind of, at least in my experience, it exists as, like, a series of planes, you know? Like, all these colors are on a specific plane, and you, like, certain characters would be colored, like, okay, their body is this color, it's red, right?
Right.
But all their skin is gold. So it's further back and it exists on another plane that may or not be like where their hair is. So I was seeing all these characters. And it was this multiple, like a planar effect. And it's cool, but like it doesn't necessarily like you have to compromise, you know, like as far as what the effect is versus the probably vast majority that is buying the comics that doesn't have those glasses.
That's
well,
true.
I would say this, Travis. It is just as hard reading it without the glasses as it is with the glasses. So maybe the planar, like the colors being on a different plane, jacks your mind up further. But I read them all today, and I was like, this is brutal. This is kind of brutal reading it normally. So it's just, I mean, I know what they were trying to do back in the day, but reading it now, it's just like, my goodness, like, help us here. Just help us with the colors, at least. But I knew what they were trying to do back then, so I understood it. But it didn't make it kind of easy reading it today.
So I will agree with you, but with the slight caveat that hashtag unpopular opinions, Psylords is one of my favorite Valiant books ever. And I know that is not a popular opinion, but let me tell you, I've said this before on like Valiant forums or on the Facebook page, and people come out of the woodwork and agree. So I don't know if they're like just agreeing because I said it, or if people actually feel that this is a great book. Because I've always enjoyed it. I usually reread this like once a year, maybe. So I've read this many, many times, and to me, it doesn't get any worse. It doesn't get any better, nor is the book great, but I have an affinity. By the way, we're talking about the old school comic, not the new issue that's coming out today. It never gets any better. And actually, we'll talk about this, I'm sure, but the last couple issues are kind of bad. But there's something about that like space opera feel of like 60s, 70s sci-fi that I think Psylords catches pretty well. Because it's written in kind of in that style. And yeah. I don't think it's supposed to be... I mean, maybe it is supposed to be good. I don't know. But it almost feels like it's more like an homage to me than anything else. And it could be just because I'm a big sci-fi fan and I love that stuff. But yeah, some thoughts on that.
Well, I'm curious why it's your favorite, Martin. Like why... What about it do you really speaks to you?
I'm going to give you my top three old school favorite Valiant comics or series, not single issues. There are some other series that had better single issues. But X-Men Manowar is number one, Silos is number three, and The Visitor is number three.
Number three.
I've been drinking some Nolens and tonic, so I may jumble up some words. We'll see. I've been to a rave, guys, okay? Can't help it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, Psylords number two and The Visitor number three. And, I mean, I think we can all agree, Psylords and The Visitor, maybe not the best books. But
The Visitor's not great, no.
No, it's not. But to me, sometimes it's not about, like, quality so much as how much enjoyment I get out of a book. And there's, like I said, there's something about Psylords that has its sci-fi space opera feel of the 60s that I really love. Same with The Visitor. Like, it's not a great book. There's a lot of quirks in the storyline. But I enjoyed the reveal of that book. And I thought it was kind of an interesting journey to get there.
Yeah, you're right. And I agree with you. It was the reveal. Like, so I didn't read it back in the 90s past issue, like, 3, The Chaos Effect. But when I read it today, it revealed a lot to me. It progressed the story. So it went from, 4002 to 4020?
Right.
So it progressed the story along. And that meant a lot to me, whether the book was cheesy in parts or it didn't fill gaps in certain areas. It was just like, President Magnus, okay, this is the event. We'll probably get into this. This is the advancement of the hardcore. It just advanced the story along, which meant more to me. It pushed the Valiant timeline to a point where I'm like, okay, that's cool. I mean, I take it for what it was. And I appreciated that more than expecting each issue to be like a home run. Is that what that you were feeling, Mark?
I agree totally, dude. Agree totally. I mean, you guys know I love Batman. I hate to bring Batman up on this show, but I've been on a kick with like Golden Age and Silver Age stories for the last probably 2 or 3 years. And I love the hell out of that era. And the thing is, you got to understand, the level of comic book storytelling has obviously evolved a lot. I mean, even in the last, 5 or 10 years, but for sure over the last 20, 30 years, there's been a lot of changes in the way comics are told. And I feel like when you try to read a comic, the best way to get the most out of the story that you're reading is not to look at it with the eyes that you have now, but try to place yourself in a world where the story existed, right? And obviously, if I'm reading, like, I always like to bring up, like, Bob Haney, Detective Comics, for example, because they're the most absurd thing you will ever read. But that's what comics were in the, early 70s, right? They made fun of themselves, and they knew it. And so they made the most out of it. It's like, I don't know if you guys watch Legends of Tomorrow on the CW. I love that show. It's one of my favorite shows on TV. And when the show first came out, everybody poo-pooed on it because it was kind of campy and fun. And that's what I liked. If I'm going to watch something, there are times where I want to be educated. There's times where I want to be scared. And there's times where I just want to have fun. And this show is just fun. And when season 2 came out, the show realized, like, this is what the show's identity is. Let's just go with this. And the stories have gotten progressively zanier, and it has worked. And that show has a very strong following. And I think it's the same for these books. When they were coming out, maybe that wasn't the case, right? Because obviously comic book companies need to put out good books that people will buy so they can make money. But to me, like, it's always kind of felt that way. I think sometimes maybe we try to put too much into the stories that we read instead of actually just deciding to have fun reading a comic.
But do you think when that book was written, they wrote that book we're just going to go with our story, the hell with the sales? Or was it back in the 90s where they said, we need to sell this book, that's why we're going to do Valiant Vision, and this is a serious storyline?
Well, so you got to remember, like, when the original Saddlers came out, it was kind of a weird in-between place for Valiant, right? Because it was after Shooter had left, so it's this kind of, like, limbo area of storytelling, and right before Acclaim took over. Because, like, I think Acclaim took over in 95, late 95. So it was kind of a weird limbo area where, like, all the cool stuff that Shooter had set up was over.
Right. So you think this might have been the end of Shooter's story?
No. I think this was probably. I mean, if Shooter had this idea, I don't think it was from the beginning.
Shooter out basically after Unity?
Yeah, Shooter was out pretty early. Like, what was that? 92, mid 92.
Yeah, I think this is probably after Shooter, but like this, I think what I maybe most like. I guess why I respond to it as much is because this story, in my opinion, grows out of the Magnus storyline.
Yeah, the Malivores.
Which I, Yeah, like the Psylords first appear in the Maliv War story, and they show up, and basically, like, Magnus and the people of Earth are like, who are you? No thanks. Like, bye bye, you know? And for some reason, like, they then choose to shift the story almost 20 years into the future after the Maliv Wars is like where the Psylords series starts.
Yep.
But I won't necessarily complain with that, although it's maybe it was a weird choice for all of those series to jump forward so drastically, and Rye did it too at the exact same time.
Yep.
But that is part of like my buy-in for the story, is that this character Danny Del Sol, the U.S. or Earth ambassador to the Psylords, was a character that was introduced in Magnus. Like, that's part of why I really enjoy the series and how it fits into the continuity. And I think the first arc of the series is really interesting and brilliant. And like, I think it's actually very well done. And then, like, the next maybe 2-3 issues were interesting, like, but they unfortunately start going towards a point where the company gives up on it. And eventually they're just like, oh, maybe they'll show up in Magnus sometime. Better just buy my Magnus and hope that the Psylords will show up.
Well, yeah, and that's how the series ends, right? Appearing bimonthly on Magnus Robofighter.
Right.
No, I agree with you. I think what's interesting is, had the industry been in a different place at the time, and had Valiant been in a different place, I wonder how this book would have shaped out. Because, I mean, the concept itself is really interesting, right? And it ties in directly with the stuff that was going on in the present time at Valiant. It also extrapolates from that and places it in a world where it could exist with Magnus and Rye and all those other books. But the thing is, I would say out of the 10 issues, there's only really like 5 issues of story. Right, because you have those first 2 issues which kind of set things up, yep. And then issue 3 goes directly to Chaos Effect, right? So you have the Destroyer come in, and there's no real reason why Destroyer should have been in this book, other than as a tie-in title to this big event, because when the Psylords meet the Soul of the Destroyer, there's no repercussions at all, right? Like, they come in, they fight, Destroyer kills a couple guys, and he just disappears. And then we're back in issue 4 with the story that was taking place in issue 2. And that's, you know, then you have the next couple issues, like 4, 5, 6 kind of follow on that story. And then, like, things kind of fall off after that, right? Because you have the Destroyer comes back in, and again, no real repercussions for this book. And then you go into this new direction, reintroducing the Harbinger Foundation, but now in the future, right, in 4020. And then the book ends. So
yeah, had, it's a letdown.
Yeah, well, had the book had a chance to continue, maybe it could have been more interesting. Had this been a mini series, maybe it could have been more interesting. But the industry was in a very different place in 94-95 than it is even today. And that's one of the reasons I have a lot of hopes for the Psylords book that is out today by Fred Van Lente, because it can get away from some of that, right? Because a lot of people are writing comics more for a miniseries format or even a shorter run format. And so you're able to pack a lot more story into your book. And I don't want to talk about the new one yet, but I think there's some interesting things that pop up in the first issue. But obviously not enough for you to know exactly what's happening.
All right. So my point is this. Do you think Valiant back then and right now made the same mistake with just the title branding the book like they did with Imperium? Instead of continuing the Harbinger line and changing the name to Imperium, do you think you may have lost readers there? I think they kind of lost readers when they changed it to Psylords or Stormwatchers or Star Watchers or whatnot. You know, because it just seems like a new title. You don't know how it ties into the previous storyline.
Yeah.
And I kind of got that feeling. It's just like when you read it and you force yourself to read it, you can say, oh, this is great. It ties into this. But when I just, if I'm at a comic shop and I look at the title, I'm like, okay, a new Valiant title? how does this tie in? I see these yellow, orange, and red people. Who are they? You know, where I think if they kind of were less creative with the title and tied it into previous their tent post titles, it may have got a bigger following and maybe would have went past 10 issues or however many issues it were, 8 issues or 10 issues.
So, I think one thing that Valiant has always had is a very strong, loyal core fan base, right? And I understand what you're saying, but that also holds true for both Imperium and Psylords, which are the two examples you brought up. So Imperium, it may not be something that can be marketed to a larger audience because, like, what the hell does Imperium mean, right? But if you're reading the books, you know this is the continuation of Harada's story. You know who Harada is. Same with Psylords. You might not have any idea what the hell a Psylord is, but you look at this book and you see that they have hardcore emblems on their chest, and you're like, okay, like there's something here, right? But for people that know nothing about Valiant Comics, it's going to be nothing. So it could be named whatever. You can call this book Pedro Flies to Space, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it wouldn't matter.
Okay, so from a marketing standpoint, do you think they were in a meeting and said, let's just introduce the continuation of this storyline under a new title, and people will just gravitate towards it because it's a new title and it's a number one and everybody likes number one and they'll just jump on it.
Don't forget the sweet chromium cover.
And the chromium cover. Or, you know, were there people in the room that said, no, you're just doing a multi, you know, this is a multi-story arc, calling it, you know, Psylords or Imperium. It's just another story arc. You know, just title it, you know, what it was, and we can keep the brand loyalty and move forward, kind of like they do with Bloodshot. You know, Bloodshot, it's Bloodshot all the way through, but they rename all the story arcs, and we all buy the number, well, us collectors buy all the story arcs and the new titles and blah, 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 but it's still Bloodshot. They never deviate really too much from the Bloodshot name. But I think with Imperium and Psylords, they kind of made the same mistake, in my opinion, and I may be wrong because I don't have all the history, but it seems like after reading it, they made the same mistake twice, decades later.
So there was some kind of lawsuit with the name of the book. So I don't know if you guys paid attention to the...
This is Marvel, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, yes.
Yeah. Franklin Richards.
Mm-hmm. So there was a copyright trademark issue. So after issue 2, they actually took Reign of the Star Watchers off the book. Right. So Star Watchers is like a trademark thing. But the weird thing was that so is Psylords. So I'm not sure how that kind of whole thing worked out. But that's the reason for the logo change. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but take a look at a publisher like Image, right? So back in the day, Image used to do, they had the studios, right? So like Liefeld did Youngblood and Brigade or whatever. You had Silvestri doing Darkness and Witchblade. You had Cyberforce. And now they're not that anymore, right? They're basically a large independent publishing house. I mean, like, they still do Savage Dragon and Spawn or whatever, but it's basically an indie publishing house. What sets it apart from what Valiant or anybody else might want to do? You know, if Image puts out, I mean, Walking Dead is a big name by now, right? But when Walking Dead came out, like, does that mean anything to you?
No, right? Not like, then, because it's a new title.
Not then, and Kirkman was nobody then either.
Right.
Right, so... But the book made it big, right? And people followed it, and it still sells a ton of copies. So why would it be any different for Valiant or any other publisher?
Yeah, but I would add, though, that, like, Psylords right now is a brand that – it's a pre-existing brand, you know?
Yes.
And it's a brand that they teased was coming back for a few years.
So
they're trying to build on the value of that brand.
Yeah.
But I would argue also – they, in a way, did, like, put pieces in place to lead to this, although they really weren't as explicit as old school Valiant was, as being like, yo, but, like, check this series out when it comes out, you know? Like, there's pieces in Exo Manowar that point to Psylords, but they don't tell you it's the Psylords when they're doing it.
So what you guys are saying is the difference is that Valiant is a shared universe.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I don't know if I buy that argument, to be honest with you. I think part of the problem a lot of times with these books is that as Valiant fans, we get a little too attached to how Josh Dysart or somebody else did a particular book, or like you want this character in here and not that one. You don't want him in space, you want him underground, and just because like you're used to a particular thing. And maybe that's part of the problem that a company like Valiant has, where you have a status quo that you kind of need to live up to. But ultimately, like if that's all you do, you're not growing your company. You know what I mean?
I just think with Valiant having such a niche market, like you said, Martin, you would think like they're doing with Bloodshot. I'll say this again: like they never leave the Bloodshot name. Like that's their tent post. They want to always throw Bloodshot out there, and then they'll rebrand it. You know, Bloodshot Reborn, Bloodshot Salvation. It's still Bloodshot. So with Harbinger, why not give it the same treatment? You change it to Imperium. And back in the 90s, they went from, you know, Harbinger, and then when they got to, what was it, issue 25, then they kind of switched the story arc and the storytelling, and then it eventually evolves into, you know, Psylords. Why wouldn't you name it Harbinger Psylords or Harbinger Star Watchers or Harbinger whatever? To Travis's point, you keep that brand there, so you keep people there. And so that's what I'm saying. In their marketing meetings where they're saying, was a discussion, do we need to come out with, you know, a new story arc, but do we need to rename it so people think it's a new title so they'll buy it? You know, and I can understand it in the 90s. You wanted every title you brought out, people just bought the crap out of it because they thought it was sending their kids to college. You know, that's the running joke that we always talk about. You know, was that the discussion? Or, you know, were there people in the room that say, you know, this is like our bread and butter. Keep it going. You know, just rename the subtitle so we can further the story. So that's what I want to discuss with you guys right now. Like, do you see that, or am I like totally off base here?
I don't know if I agree with that, to be honest. Okay. Because the problem is, you by doing that, you're appealing to your existing fan base. Because if you put in Harbinger Psylords or Hardcore Psylords, people are going to be like, well, what the hell is a Hardcore, right? Like, and they go and look it up, and they're like, oh, so I need to go read this book and that book, and yeah, I'm good, no thanks. But then if you have this book where you have new characters coming in, you might be more interested in actually picking up the story, right? Because you're starting from the beginning. It's something that I think Valiant has always had an issue with since the relaunch in 2012, and that still kind of has an issue with, where people are kind of like, oh, well, Valiant's been around for 30 years. Well, no, it hasn't, right? It's a different company. Oh, well, you know, this book has been out for whatever, 5 years. I don't want to go pick it up anymore because then I have to read 50 issues. Well, no, you don't. But we know that. But the average comic book reader doesn't think that way, right? That's why companies relaunch books all the time. Because when you have a number one, people will buy it. And maybe you'll get some new readers out of it. In the meantime, you have sales because it's the number one.
Right. That's what I was talking about. Like, was that the discussion in the room? Do we need to make this, you know, Psylord so that new people would jump in? Because it worked for me. It did. Back in 94, I was a junior in high school. It worked for me. You know, Valiant Vision, the Chromium cover, Psylords. I had no idea what the hell Psylords was. It was a new Valiant cover. I love Valiant. A new Valiant title, I mean. And I love Valiant. I bought it. Two copies because I wanted the Valiant Vision. So it works.
And I make fun of gimmick covers all the time. But the way I got into Valiant was through a Chromium cover. Because I saw it on the shelf and I said, holy crap, that looks awesome. So, you know, there's something to it. I don't know. I think if we had an answer, then surely Valiant or any other publisher would have an answer as well. And the comic industry wouldn't have the problems that it has.
I mean, I think that I think they're in a place where right now they're trying to build new properties. You know, like that's why we're getting a Dr. Mirage book, or, you know, like a Punk Mambo book.
Killers is coming out. You had Incursion come out. Yep.
I mean, Killers really is an extension of Ninja K.
Sure, but how would you know that just from the name Killers?
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you see my point. Like, I think that they're in a place where they have a limited like slate that they're releasing stuff, and there's a lot of the cores right now are not represented, you know, like Bloodshot's coming back in a few months, Archer and Armstrong, Eternal Warrior, Exo Manowar is coming back someday, you know, like whatever, in a few months.
Yeah, November, I think. Yeah.
Like Harbinger may never come back. Like they kind of lack a core, and really they're trying to try out new things on the periphery, you know, and that's fine. And I feel like maybe that's where there's the most upside versus something that is heavily mined and is the core, but you can do both.
I mean, I don't know. I would say that the core has always remained the same. I know that the tentpole discussion has come up on this show. It has come up on Only the Valiant and on VCR and some other shows as well. It's a topic that comes up all the time. But I think the core ultimately has always been the same. And the core, I mean, Harbinger is part of the core, so it should be on there. But, you know, Harbinger, Exo Manowar, I would say probably Ninjak. And aside from that, like, it's kind of tough in the market that we have in comics now. Like, how do you sell an Eternal Warrior book, right? You need like a very specific special writer to tell a great Eternal Warrior story. I know that's the story that I would want, but I don't know if that's a story that the market would want, right?
You'd almost have to have like a screenplay writer write an Eternal Warrior story.
Absolutely.
It would almost have to be like a TV show.
Well, you know,
because it has all the aspects there.
So that's how that's what they did with Time Walker back in the day. Not the Valenti run, but in the original Valiant, I can't remember who started the book, but they ended up having a fantasy writer take over the book, I think like 3 or 4 issues in, and she finished the rest of the run. And I thought that run was actually really quite good, because she brought in a lot of interesting elements to Time Walker that a comic writer maybe wouldn't have, I don't know if had the balls to do, but maybe had the inkling to do when you're in this place where you're in a shared universe that you're kind of within these rules. And by bringing somebody that's kind of an outsider to the whole industry, it kind of made a difference. And I mean, we can say that now with the current iteration with like Heiserer, right? When Heiserer wrote Secret Weapons, I would still say Secret Weapons is one of my favorite Valiant books of the current era. And, yep. And I think that's probably true for a lot of people. And, you know, the guy's not a comic book writer. He writes movies and TV. He also wrote one of my favorite movies, Arrival. Granted, it's not his story, but whatever. Like, he's a great writer, right? And he was able to bring something completely different to the Valiant universe that nobody that was there was doing, right? I mean, you had guys at Valiant for years, right? Matt Kent's been there for years. Benditti was there for years. Dysart was there for years. Nobody was doing that kind of story, right? Like, they all told great stories, but they were great stories in a comic book medium, and they were kind of tied in by the rules of comics. This guy just told something completely different.
And the brilliance between, you know, Secret Weapons was, it was, you know, something from the past that we could grab, you know, we had a foundation from, but he told it from a whole different perspective. It was brilliant, in my opinion. It was great. Like, I love the way Valiant now takes, you know, say for instance, Psylords. They take it and they twist it, but they still throw nuggets from the past in there. That's genius to me. You know, just, in my opinion, run with it. Tie in what you want to tie in from the past, but tie it into the future. And I don't know if we want to talk about the new Psylords and how it ties into the past or potentially in the future, but I think you can have a long dialogue about that, a long discussion about, you know, the past and the future.
Let's do this. Travis, do you have any thoughts before I segue into the new book?
No, let's segue.
Let's segue. So, I mean, basically the gist of the original Psylords is you have the hardcore, right? Which, if you've been reading Valiant even now, you know who the hardcore are. They hunt Harbinger kids, okay? They hunt Psyots. And they have these abilities. They can gain Psyot abilities through, you know, conjuring the mainframe to give them the powers, okay? Basically, that's the gist of it. In the original iteration of Psylords, this is where the Psylords come from. You learn that pretty on. I think the origin story is in issue like 2 or 3.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
For the old school Psylords?
Of course.
Like, what I find interesting is they leave They leave Earth, having previously worked for the U.S. government. And now they're like, oh, we're going to do our own thing, you know? And it's after the Harbinger Wars, which maybe, or not, like, may have just genocided all Harbingers, you know?
I mean,
like, I wonder if they just killed all the Harbingers, and they're like, oh, that's bad. We should leave Earth.
Well,
bye-bye. And like, then they go and like, rebrand as the Star Watchers. And then, like, Raven Rock does some bad stuff. And they're like, oh, new rules. Like, no killing and no boning. That's the new Star Lords.
That is a great nutshell. That is a great nutshell.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Pretty much.
All right, sorry.
But so you see what I mean, right? Like, there's some really cool concepts in that series. There was just not enough time for that story to be told. Because really, like, everything that we just talked about is told in, like, half an issue, kind of just glossed over in narration. And then we're just back to the normal thing. And, like, that's fine. I know some people love the Stan Lee thing, right? Stan Lee always thinks every issue should be someone's first issue. And I completely disagree with that saying. Because I think when you do that, you are hindered by these fake rules, and you can never truly advance your story if you're constantly making your story accessible for new readers. Publishers may disagree with me, that's fine. But the thing is, if I read 100, 200 comics a month, and every month you're giving me kind of the same thing, then that's no longer interesting to me, right? So I'm going to find something else to replace it. But yeah, that's basically the gist. So you have the Harbinger Wars, the hardcore, like, F this, we're out, they go to space, they research how to further advance their abilities, and they figure out a way to kind of work better as a team. They're kind of like sort of a hive mind, kind of. You missed the one integral part. They find the spider alien homeworld and kill all the spider aliens.
No, not really.
Well,
not at all.
Technically, that's the story, but you do see the spider aliens show up in this book.
Did they not kill them? Didn't they change their internal biome DNA?
Yes.
Like, they worship grass and plants, and they made them vegetarian.
In this book, you have this, like, cool espionage, like, background story where the spider aliens are trying to infiltrate Earth colonies.
Right.
Except it's very quickly glossed over because the Silurds figure it out and they change the way the spider aliens physiologically work, where they can no longer eat meat, they can only eat vegetables, and they basically set up a colony with nanites that they make, and they just throw all the spider aliens there. End of the spider aliens.
But the spider aliens worship plants. So yes. Basically... They were like, oh, hey, guess what? We're the good guys. We don't kill anybody, but we will force you to eat what you worship.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, like, basically you're worse than cannibals. Because like that's not India. Against our Psylord rules.
It's like going to India and saying you need to eat cows
right. Or
monkeys.
Yep.
You know, something that they revere. And they just, I translate it. It's like coming to the United States and saying you need to eat dog. And sorry, fans, sorry, people, you know, that this is the story. It's just people in the United States love their cats and dogs, but it would be the equivalent of somebody coming here and saying, you can no longer eat cattle or vegetables. You need to eat your cat and your dog.
Yes.
And you know how that would piss you off? They were pissed.
But again, that's a really cool element that's brought up in the story that's never really explained. It's very quickly wrapped up. Because, I mean,
the Psylords are so mysterious, right? Like, are they good guys or are they bad guys?
And we still don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah,
and we
right.
don't know if they're monolithic. Because, like, you know, turns out they want to build a Dyson Sphere around Earth, right? But Boaz seems at every point to be like, oh, I'm not like the rest of these guys, you know? Like, maybe they're, like, not acting right.
Maybe. Maybe it's a story about regaining your humanity. But the problem is, you don't really know, and the story is not really expanded.
Did you pick up on the name Boaz? Like, the Boaz, like, only shows up in the Bible, like, one or two times. Has a lot of Masonic, you know, inferences to it. So it was, like, really interesting that they chose the name Boaz and that character, how he did not really conform to the whole structure of the Silors. Mm-hmm. And kind of tipped off the ambassador, you know, gave her his, like, his memories and whatnot. It was, you know, Silors is not a bad story, to be honest. Like, it should have been a 25-issue run, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, like, to Mark, to your point, they compressed it a lot. There's a lot to be told in that, you know, whatever, 10-issue run.
Yeah. If, like, you know, if Valiant was a different place, if you had maybe a different writer, no disrespect to the writer of the book. I don't think he writes comics anymore anyway, but, you know, had it been somebody else, you could have easily, I mean, the 10 issues of Silos that you get could have easily been 100 issues.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
But everything was just very compressed. And again,
so they pulled the rug out, dude.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons for that, but that it is what it is. It is what it is. Overall, it's still cool. And you, I mean, you have some kind of finality to the story of the Silords. Even though, like, those last three issues, I would say, were not the best. But, like, you go into some interesting places, right? Like, the Silord's homeworld is destroyed by Raven Rock, who is a Silord that kind of defected from the main group. And who maybe has something to do with the current book. I don't know. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. At least I'm going to bring it up. But, like, there was cool stuff. It just there wasn't enough. But I think the concepts themselves are really cool, which is why I've been very excited to have this book finally come out. Because I first heard about Silords, goodness gracious, like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. I was talking to Dinesh at a conference, and he told me all kinds of awesome things. And for some reason, that book never came out. And
can I say something, Martin?
Yeah, real of course. Fast. Yeah.
Just real quick. I will let Valiant know. I think our first C2E2, I asked you, Martin, like, what the heck's up with Silords? And you did not say a damn word. So, if Valiant, if you think Martin is not adhering to his NDA, he did not say a damn word about it. We were like, come on, Martin. Nope. He said, nope. He just... So, yeah, you're good for that.
I am a man of my word.
You are.
I signed the NDA, and I never said anything. And my previous co-host of this show used to get mad at me all the time because he'd ask me questions, and he was not under NDA for some reason. So I couldn't talk to him about anything.
No, that's respectable. That, you know, you see in comics, like, people will try to – I think you talked about this on one of your other podcasts, like, you know, shuffling – you know, preview issues of different comics or whatnot. So it really, it's a testament to your character, you know, not to blow smoke up your ass, but it's a testament to your character that you are adhering to your NDA. I mean, it is, because it's so easy, you know, you hanging out with your guys that you trust and, you know, you're having a few drinks and people ask you questions and it's easy to let things go and you did. So,
well, thanks,
you
buddy.
Did it for a few years. So that, you know, I commend you for that, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
Hey, so can I ask, though, on the same subject, is this representative of what you thought Silords was going to be, the new series?
So, number one, I think it is way too early to make that decision with only one issue out. And I don't know if you guys read solicits, but if you look at solicits for, like, issues 2 and 3, it doesn't really tell you much anyway. So I don't think it's deep enough for me to make the decision. All I will say is the discussion that I had, the book sounded amazing. And if it's half as cool as what I was told originally, this book is going to be fantastic.
Well, dude, I was telling my VCR co-hosts an hour ago that Fred Van Lente has blown my mind multiple times, you know, already with his work with Valiant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if he even approaches either of those series, I'm going to be very happy with this.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And this is a very different take from the original Silords, right? I mean, we don't see a single Silord in this book.
Yep.
You do see people that have apparently Psyod abilities. They may or may not have had them before the book starts. We don't really know that. There's hints that they did, but there's hints that they didn't. So we're kind of on this journey along with these characters. And I think that's a really cool take on this whole thing. You know, you guys know one of my favorite genres of film is horror. And, like, real horror. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like, what is it, like Saw or any... I mean, like, those movies are fine. They're entertaining. But to me, like, that's not horror. Because what horror does best is keep you on the edge of your seat, wanting to know what the next thing is. And when the monster or the killer or whoever shows up, you don't see them, right? Like, they're killing in the background, right? Like, you see heads chop off frame, and then you see the head, but you never see the killer. Or you might see him in shadows, right? Or you might see characters running away from something, but you don't know what they're running from. And I think that's what makes a good horror story. And the way that, for me, this is set up, it almost feels like a horror story. I mean, it's got some elements of, like, Saw, right? Because you have these characters in apparently a space station somewhere in the middle of space. They don't know where. We don't know where. Parked outside a sun, apparently. But they don't know anything about what's going on. But they're interacting with their environment, and that's how the story is progressing. And I think because of that, more people should be really excited for this book. Because I think the way that Valenti's telling the story, it's becoming more a character-centric story as opposed to a plot-driven story. And, you know, if you ask any hardcore Valiant fan who your favorite Valiant writer is, the answer will 99% likely be Joshua Dysart. And the reason for that is that's what Dysart does, right? He drives the story through the characters. And you may not know what the story is yet, but you can certainly find characters that are really appealing. And I think Valenti does a really good job in this first issue of that.
You know, my suggestion would be, you know, after you saying that, you know, I read Psylords before reading the old 1994 version, and then I read it again today. And reading it before I read the complete 1994, I just had an open mind. Like, oh, okay, well, all right, I need to read issue two, read issue three. I just need to read it. But after reading the old Psylord series, and I read Psylords 1 again today, I'm like, oh, it makes sense. And I can kind of pick, you know, the different threads, or I can kind of see, well, this is different, this is not. You know, I to your point, I could not, initially when I read it, I couldn't pick out that the characters that they're talking about in the first issue were not Psylords. That's my whole point, when I first read it. You know, but when I read it after I read the old version, I can say, oh, okay, yeah, I can see how these are not Psylords. I can kind of maybe see where the story's coming, where it's going in the future.
You gotcha. Know what I mean? Yeah, I gotcha.
You know what I mean? So yeah, it might be better to read the old version before you read the new series.
I don't know. I've been trying to go back and forth on that since this issue first was released. I think we got a copy of this like 3 months ago.
Right.
And I mean, I usually don't read a lot of the preview copies if they're like super early like that. Because it's Psylords, I did read it. And I was excited for what I saw. I think you're partially right, because having reread the original Psylords, I did pick up on certain things that I don't think I picked up on my initial reading. But the thing is, for the average comic book reader, you're not going to have that, right? You're not going to tell Joe Schmo that buys, you know, 20 DC comics at their shop every week to go and pick up 10 issues of a 30-year-old series. But I think if you're a Valiant fan, then you should definitely reread at least like the first 6 issues of that original series, because I think you will catch certain things that will make this book really intriguing. Now, Travis, you just recorded your other show. You're on the Valiant Comics Review, VCR. And I'm curious, I don't want you to spoil the podcast. I want everyone listening to this to go listen to VCR. But I'm curious if you want to give us a somewhat spoiler-free overview of the discussion of that episode.
Oof. That's tall order as far as being spoiler free.
How about this? I understand that the other guys were not as high on this book as maybe you were. And I'm curious what the objections were for this book.
I think the objections basically were maybe, and forgive me for being kind of reductionist. I'm just trying to grapple with it, I guess. But like, I think a lot of the objections were specific to scripting. Like there were multiple references to like snappy dialogue, you know? I can acknowledge that there were lines in here that seemed like they could have come out of like an 80s action movie, you know? Like, is that like out of hand a bad thing? I don't know.
I love like, 80s action movies, so no.
Yeah, like it didn't bother me, you know? I feel like that was a big part of it was, and like, again, you know, like, there are some from our podcast, not naming names, who don't really historically like Fred Van Lente and like the way that he writes anything, dialogue or otherwise. So, you know, like more of Fred Van Lente maybe didn't speak to them. And I think that maybe there were potentially other criticisms as far as like, oh, but this is an issue one and you got to hook me on an issue one. Like you really owe me because I bought this book not knowing what it is. And basically expectations for what it should be basically being announced and solicited as a 12 issue series. You know, like, I feel like that's a big part of it is like, this is an issue where no questions are answered. It's all more questions, you know, for the most part. And we're looking forward to figuring out where they're going with all of this. But I'm invested because I think Fred Van Lente kills it on like heady, crazy narratives, you know? So I'm excited where he's going with this. For somebody who maybe wants a little bit more in issue one, which I understand that's a pretty common take, you know? Like, yeah, like they don't really answer a lot of questions in issue one. You know?
Yeah, and see, I don't have a problem with that. You know, if you're into like 25, 40, 50 issues, I won't name any names or comic books, but, you know, there's a book that I've been reading for decades that's doing exactly that, you know, 73 issues in, and I still don't know what the hell's happening. That, I could see the issue. But for a first issue, I mean, it's a first issue. How much do you want to be told, right? Don't you want to be hooked in to see where the story takes you? I mean, the characters in this book don't know what the hell's going on, so why should you?
Martin, you make a good point. If you like character-driven stories, this is a very, very good book. If you like art, like if you like that Shadow Man kind of dark artwork, this is your book. If you like a character that's like that looks like Justin E. Hart, then this is your book.
I like that.
Yeah.
And if you like and if you like colors, you know, we talked about colors from the old Psylords. Pay attention to the colors. The colors are very purposeful in this book, you know, so pay attention to it at times. You know, I think they're very upfront when they present their colors. So it has to mean something going forward. Pay attention to it. I mean, to poo-poo on issue one, I think you're not giving the book justice. This is truly a two or three issue book.
I think that's a good point. I mean, colors were really important in the original Psylords. I mean, granted, it was part of the gimmick, so maybe they wrote some of that into the gimmick, you know what I mean? The fact that, like, the suits were meant for, like, specific power sets, but it also just happened to give you that, like, Valiant Vision. You're right. The colors probably do mean something. And, I mean, you know, you have, like, a Green Lantern in this book, which I thought was awesome.
Thank you.
They're all Green Lanterns, dude.
They're all kind of Green Lanterns, yeah. But especially that one guy. I mean, like, that's literally a Green Lantern, right? He's green, and he, like, projects fists out of his fists. So if you read like old school Green Lantern, like that's what that was. That's what that book was. He projected green fists out of his fists. And I love that kind of stuff. I love that kind of stuff. I think sometimes we get a little too engrossed in what something should be instead of letting it be what it needs to be. And, yeah. And I think this book is exactly what it needs to be. I thought for a first issue, it was a great introduction. I don't remember all the characters' names, and I don't expect to right now.
They don't have names.
Well, they kind of have names.
They may be archetypes, you know?
Yes.
The old man has
a name. It feels like they're putting together like D&D squads, and they're like, oh, here you go, like, whatever, beacon, artisan, soldier, you know, like, the
oatmeal.
Like, they got barcodes on, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, like, how is that any different from, like, the Hardcore, right? Or the Harbinger? Like, think about those names.
Yeah, so,
well, that's what I thought. Sorry, Travis, go ahead.
Well, it's just that, like, I thought they gave them such, like, kind of task-specific names that I thought that there was an implication there that it's like, oh, you're a type, and you go into this group, and like you're all represented, you know? Like, you can go out on D&D missions now, you know? But also, I would just say that, like, some of the criticism I think that I ran into with some people is that we talk about character-driven stories, you know, and the importance of that, and in especially in terms of being a genuine, believable story. And the hurdle here is that these are characters that have no memory.
Right.
You know? And that's part of the story.
Exactly.
So criticisms that are based on these are not three-dimensional characters. When the characters have had their memories erased, like, I don't know that that's, you know, like, a valuable critique, you know? Like, we just have to see why they were erased or where, like, what is going to be revealed when they find out who they are. You know, I don't think they're going to end with, like, oh, by the way, you're just a generic person with no name and no character traits, you know?
it could almost be, you know, I don't think issue one sets up to be as good as Secret Weapons as far as, you know, delving into the character, each individual character, but it has that potential. I mean, it's leaving you a blank slate for each character that they introduce.
Yeah.
And if, you know, Fred, you know, takes it to where, you know, we think he may take it. I mean, this could be a new Secret Weapons, which would be awesome. Like, crazy awesome.
Yeah. We should, I'll just throw in the whole creative team. It's Fred, because we talk about Fred. Fred's only writing. We have art by Renato Guedes, who I think is brilliant. I love that he's at Valiant. I think any book that he's been in at Valiant over the last couple of years has just been amazing, just simply by looking at the art. And I can't wait to pick up this book on Wednesday and get an actual copy, because we've been reading preview copies. So they have the, you know, the colors aren't as good. They're not finalized. And you have that giant watermark in the middle. So it takes away a lot of the art. But I can't wait to get my final copy on Wednesday and see what this book looks like. By the way, I got every cover, which I haven't done in a very long time.
Welcome to the club, buddy.
And yay. I also got the pre-order edition.
Good for you.
Yes, because I love Will's Portacio, so I had to.
This, by the way, I think is my favorite work that Renato has done for the company, period.
It's pretty high up there. I agree.
Can I say something, guys?
Of course.
I think we missed. If you're an old school Valiant fan, like truly old school from day one, if you don't look at this last page of this book, it get giddy. You're not a true... I mean, giddy, like, it's... jump up and scream or your eyes get big. You got to talk to me on Twitter, please. Because when I saw this last page, the first panel, I'm like, holy crap, finally. Tell me, guys, if I'm looking at it wrong. But the way I'm taking it, like, finally they're bringing this element from the old VHI into the new Valiant universe.
Well, let's talk about some Easter eggy stuff, I think, because I think you're bringing up a good point. Now, granted, I do read the original Side Lords like once a year, like I said. The creatures that are jailing the quartet, right? The four. When I first saw them, I was like, that looks like a spider alien face.
Thank you.
Right? The masks that they're wearing looks like a spider alien face. And I was like, that's pretty sweet, right? Because the spider aliens play a part in the Side Lords. And they were a huge part of VEI or VH1. I mean, from the beginning, right?
Yes.
From the very beginning. So, huge part. So, it's cool to see that. And I know that when Venditti introduced, like, the Vine, for example, some people were kind of, like, poo-pooing it, eventually liking it because the Vine were awesome. But, like, a lot of people wanted spider aliens. And the cool thing about the Psylords is that not so much in-universe, although, I mean, they could do it, but within, like, the writing scheme of things, from VH1 to now, the Vine basically are spider aliens, right? Because we talked about this when we're talking about the original Psylords book. When the Star Watchers, the Psylords capture the spider aliens, they redo their physiology, so they're vegetarians, right? They already worship plants, now they're vegetarians. It changes, like, the way they look, the way they act, into something more akin to the Vine, right? Because the Vine also worship plants. They are also vegetarians. The Vine don't eat meat. They eat fruits and vegetables. That's why they had the humans, the Visigoths, farming those plants. Okay, partially it was religious, but partially it's for food. So that's kind of the segue, right? So, like, you want an Easter egg? There's your Easter egg. Right, you're bringing in this cool thing from VH1.
Okay, but the Easter egg, though, the specific Easter egg is from EXO.
Yeah. Well, yes. Wait, are we talking about that already? All right, go ahead.
Talk about it.
Yeah, like these guys we see on that panel, those are the Monomen.
Yes.
And Dinesh said that issue one of EXO Manowar. You saw the castle. That castle had a spoiler for Psylords.
Right.
The spoiler is that, the sigil on top of the castle, that's the sigil of the Psylords.
Yep.
And that's what brought the Monomen to get that 10 issues later, and that's who we're seeing here.
Yep.
So, I mean, like, I don't know. You've read it. Are the Monomen the Star Watchers? Are you on board with that?
I'm not sure I'm on board with that.
So they're being held by someone. There are also Star Watchers, and there are also Psylords.
So I think the way that it may shape out to be is the Psylords are more like the Psylords that we would have before Psylords number one, where they haven't gone through like this cultural change where they're assigning colors to different powers, and you have, you know, the first rule of Fight Club is, you know, don't talk about Fight Club. I think it might be more like that, in which case it's a much more closed off society. A much more, I don't want to say like a conqueror type society, but definitely something a little more medieval, where maybe these creatures, not necessarily enslaved, but at least work for the Psylords. Because remember, one of the cool things that I liked about the original Psylords is, and something that, again, they never really finished, is the Psylords create the Dyson spheres around star systems that they go to, right? That's kind of a supposedly big plot twist that doesn't really go anywhere. When people start rebelling against the Psylords being in Earth orbit or in Jupiter orbit, because they're going through the not the Oort cloud. What is it? The asteroid belt, collecting all the asteroids to build their space station. It could be that that's more of the Psylords that we get here, where they might be going to different star systems and helping like give some technology away, but in return, like, it's kind of a hidden thing. We're like, hey, here's we're awesome. We're going to give you technology to never be hungry again. But in return, we need 10,000 virgins to come to our palace and have a rave with us. You know what I mean?
Well, that was the whole issue. Like, when you read the old Psylords, it was for 17 years, we've been trying to – they basically were auditioning their skills as peacemakers.
Yeah. Right,
to the whole galaxy. And just, they were, like, begging people, like, hire us, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then they finally get hired, and then it was just all a PR stunt to say we want to get trust from Jupiter and all these different worlds or these different solar systems so that, to your point, Martin, they can basically, long story short, take their advanced nanites that could take raw material from the asteroid belt and to make superstructures like diamond,
yep,
strong, what was it? It was just basically a ring around with the solar system or their planet or whatever.
Yeah, they're building a Dyson sphere around Earth.
You're right.
Yeah, but there's multiple inhabited planets outside of where the Dyson sphere was going to be constructed.
Correct. But
like Jupiter and Saturn were like, what?
Yeah.
You're building what?
But like, why do they care? Because they're outside of it. But they do mention that there's at least 5 other star systems, right? That they've built these spheres around.
If you built a Dyson sphere, anything outside that would be screwed, dude.
Yeah, it's done. I mean, it depends how you build it.
And that's what they said initially from the maybe issue 1 when they had the ambassador to Magnus. They basically said like the whole galaxy was like, these guys are a joke. You can equate it. I hope I don't piss anybody off to like the Russians. Like, you know what? You know, if you trust them, they have ulterior motives. Like, you know what you get in bed with. You know, you lie down with dogs, you get fleas. You know. And I'm sorry if I piss people off. So maybe there's another analogy that may work better. But it's kind of the same thing. You kind of know what you're getting into when you get to them. If you work with these guys, and so they're constantly for 17 years, they're trying to win over the galaxy.
Yeah.
And then they kind of won over them off of one battle. And then everybody hired them as just like a mercenary group or basically a peacekeeping group. And then come to find out, yep, at the end of the day, everybody's in for themselves. The frog people were in for themselves.
The frog people.
The Psylords were in for themselves. Everybody's in for themselves. Nobody's in for the people. So... it kind of, you know what, that aspect of it, the story does hold up over time if you think about it.
Yeah,
it does hold up over time.
And you, I mean, you mentioned the Russian thing. It's, some people might be pissed. Who cares? But like, if you take it into like sci-fi terms, that's a common trope as well, right? And I've never liked that trope because to me, like, if an alien civilization is advanced enough to come here, they're not going to have the stupid view on life that humans have, where wherever we go, we conquer. You know, I think if we ever do encounter aliens, they're not going to be as dumb and selfish as we are.
Right. Because we conquer over self-preservation, right?
Right. And that's the thing, like, people always say that, right? Like, don't send, the probes into space. Shut SETI down, because when the aliens find the signal, they're going to come in and destroy us. Well, like, why would they travel billions of light years to destroy us? Like, why do they give a shit? You know what I'm saying? Like, if they come here, it's not going to be to destroy us. It'll be like, oh, let's see what they're up to. Are they worth talking to? Well, if they are, we'll stay. If not, like, we'll have them think forever that there's no aliens. They're the only ones in the universe.
Yeah, they might not show up because they know that we'll try to take them over. Right? They want to have tea with us and kind of talk about
Yeah,
it.
They want to have tea, and we just want to take their shit.
Right.
Because that's the way people work.
Yeah, that's the way the world works. But yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. So, Travis, what are we talking about, Psylords? And I'm looking at XO now, XO number one. So what were you talking about, the Psylords in XO number one?
The castle that shows up.
The castle is a ship. And like, whatever issue it is, 9 or 10 of XO Man of War, the Mono War, the Mono Men come to Gorin and they're like, hey, we're here. Like, don't worry about us. We just want like this thing that's on the castle, and you know, Arik kind of shuts them down, but he, like, eventually he's like, here you go, like, F off, you got what you wanted, and like, what they got is the symbol that they emblazon on these people's heads.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. Interesting. I'm reading through it now.
Oh, through XO1?
Yeah, I'm going back. So I remember, you know, people talking about that, but I'm going to kind of go back there and kind of pick up on it. But I do remember the ship. That was like a big deal. You know, we all talked about, like, I think in Discord or whatnot about
the ship. Yeah, yep.
And how it was a big deal. This is fascinating. You know, guys, to be honest with you, this is kind of like the most fascinating, or interested I've been in a book, because as far as like going back and reading old stuff and seeing how it ties into the new stuff. And I know Valiant does that a lot. Nowadays, they take the old stuff and they tweak it. So we talk, you know, with the new Psylords, you talk about Scion and you can see the old Scion and the new Scion. Or we talk about Harbinger with, you know, Livewire. You see the old live wire from the new one. You see how different they are. So that's kind of cool. I like that.
I'm glad he brought Scion up, because I wanted to talk about that. So in the original series, Scion, which in this book is the character that kind of breaks out the four, is the quote-unquote son of Raven Rock, which is the Psylord that goes against the culture. And I thought that was cool that they would bring him in. Right, it's obviously not the same character. It's a very different character, much older character. But it does have me like curious, right? As an old school Valiant reader, will we see Raven Rock?
You have to, or something similar to Raven Rock.
Because I mean, they didn't go too much into this in that original series. But basically, Raven Rock left the Psylords, or maybe got kicked out.
Go ahead.
I mean, it depends how you look at it. But he left the Psylords and kind of started experimenting on his own, right? So he was able to not only recreate Psylords technology, but make it better, because he could use any power at any time without a problem. Whereas the Psylords had this caste system where each caste kind of had their own power set. He can use whatever power he wanted.
They separated the powers because of him.
Yes.
Because he fought them all, and they were like, after defeating him, they were like, and now we're going to separate the power set for everybody.
Right. But one of the things that is kind of tossed around is that he was kind of building his own Psylords. And the only character that we really see of that is Scion, which is Scion that shows up in this book. He's the last one. We don't know, like, how they were created, or if he just took other Psylords and, you know, helped them gain powers, or if he experimented on humans to create his own Psylords. And I think that's where it becomes interesting, because you have these characters taken out of Earth, being experimented on, right? They're all having these, brain surgeries on the space station, and maybe the ultimately could be the being behind it is Raven Rock, which if that's the case, I think that would be awesome, right? Because I think it would fill in like a lost history of the Psylords that we never really got.
Yeah, because originally the Scion was the last son of Raven Rock, right?
Right.
And he died.
Yep.
So they have to bring Raven Rock back, because to give you the backstory, right? The Psylords basically had, they were like Bloodshot and Hardcore all together, mixed together, right? They had enhanced nanites.
Yeah, the Mulmax, not as cool as nanites. Yeah.
Right. So they basically, you know, enhanced nanites. So they had unlimited power. They didn't have to go into a database. Am I right? Like, they didn't have to go to a database and
right,
say, turn on flight, turn on shield. It's like the Hardcores did. The Hardcorps did. They basically could be like almost harbingers in a sense, right?
Yeah, that was basically the experiment. And I think it was shown in like one panel, or maybe two panels in one page.
Right. So he basically said, well, I'm going to exploit this. So they gave him a territory, right? And he became a totalitarian. And then when everybody else found out about it, they were like, screw this, dude. That's not our mission. They fought him. He ran away. And he caused problems ever since, right? But he had a son, Scion, right? and his son died. But in the new series, you see the name Scion come up. So how does he play into it, to your point, Martin?
Yeah, and I don't think it was his actual son.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, I don't think it was his actual son. And they also hint that there were others, and Scion's just the last one left.
Yeah, because he said, this is my last son.
Yeah.
But you're saying not his last biological son, like his last protege or something?
Yeah, I never had the idea that it was his actual son. It was more like, you know, Vader and the Emperor or whatever, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Because he did talk down to him a couple times. Like, how do you not see?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
When they tried to blow up the moon at Pluto, he said, how do you not see this? Do I have to spell it out to you? You know, blow up the moon.
I love Scion. He was so cheesy, though. Like, when the settlers attack him, they're like, he's like, haha, they're only sending two ships? That's not enough.
Right. Corny, right?
Yeah, like, super corny.
Super corny.
Yeah, I love that stuff, though.
Yeah,
his costume wasn't even red. Come on. Dead.
Yep. It was green, and we have a Green Lantern here, so bam!
Oh, it's colors. We talked about colors.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I would tell this, like, if people are down on Psylords issue number one, I'd say you're not giving it a fair shake. Not from a bias standpoint. I think after reading Psylords from the 90s, you got to give this at least a one arc viewing. It one issue couldn't set it up the way that Fred is doing it. I mean, it has so many threads to it that you got to give it at least three issues. Easy. It justifiably, you should. I mean, it's not something that Valiant's throwing against the wall and saying, we hope you guys like it. We're throwing Valiant Vision at it, or we're, you know, you're
God,
getting,
I wish.
You know, like 120 incentive cover for it. It's just like, this is a good ass story. Read it.
Yeah, when I had Greg and Matt on, I was like, please tell me that you're gonna have glasses. No glasses. Shame on them. Greg, I know you listen. Shame on you.
But you know we do, Mark.
We love you, Greg.
We do love you, Greg. Greg knows I love him. I was talking to Greg last night.
Greg is great.
Greg is awesome. I gotta say, shout out to Greg. You know, we maybe not so much in the current iteration of the show, but when it was Paul and I, we always shout out like Hunter and Adam and Dinesh and everybody. And one issue that I had for some time was that I didn't feel like there was enough relatability with the crew. I know we talked about this offline, Duan, but I got to say, like, talking to Matt and then, like, just talking offline to Greg, I think – If you give these guys a chance, they're awesome. So please do.
Oh, no doubt. They're the best. I mean, the way they bust their butt when we were in Chicago, I think we talked about it before.
Yeah.
You got it. They're legitimate. They're in this. There's no fakeness about them. They're genuinely in this. They love Valiant. You got to give them at least the benefit of the doubt.
And I'm gonna give Greg a double shout out because Greg is also a big DC fan. And I see you commenting on DC Comics all the time, Greg. So shout out to you. Any final thoughts on Psylords?
Let me just put in a final thought.
Yeah.
I really feel like, you know, this issue sets up a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really know where it's going. You know, I don't really know where any of this is going. But I know Fred. And I know what he can do. Especially with 12 issues, which is what he had for Ivar Time Walker, you know? So I am really excited, and I hope that he can bring some of that to the table for this one.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of piggyback on that. I read way too many comics. My wife found my C2E2 credit card bill, by the way. That was fun.
Oh, shit.
Tell us about that.
No, we're not talking about that.
I want to hear that story.
We had no idea, Heather. No idea. We weren't even there.
She's like,
no.
She said, she know. Said, you spent how much? She said, she said, you spent how much on comics? I said, oh, no. It wasn't all comics. It was a lot of beer. And, yeah, it went well. Don't worry. It was fine.
Except for the Solar CGC, that might have put you over the top.
Yeah, it was fine.
Okay, future blackmail conversation.
I only spent $400 on that. It's fine.
It was a good deal.
It was a steal. Matter of fact, it's on my wall.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't usually buy CGC comics. When I do, it's very rare. But when I do, it's because I want like a good enough copy, and I'll just pop it out of the case. But this one I don't want to pop out of the case because I think it's a beautiful cover, and to me it's more like a piece of art. So I just put it on the wall.
It is. Oh, that was beautiful. Like we had a few adult beverages at that particular point in time. Yeah,
maybe a few.
Maybe, and we were talking to each other into buying stuff. But I know when I saw that Martin, I was like, "That's a no brainer, dude." Is that the deal you got it for? You did good, my friend. You did. That was a very good decision, sir. Happy Father's Day.
I agree. Well, thank you.
You too.
We're working on it.
Soon. But yeah, I thought this first issue was awesome, and I can't wait to hear what people have to say that are picking this up. I think it's an engrossing story. You know, like some first issues, you want certain things to happen. I think the way this one plays out, it has me curious to see where issue two goes. So in terms of that, it's a successful first issue to me.
Yeah. It's like Punk Mambo to me.
Yeah, that's great.
That first issue of Punk Mambo, it's just like, I can't wait to issue two because I want to know where you're taking me for this, with this story. So, yeah.
Amen.
Amen.
All right, let's wrap this show up. Thank you for listening to the Valiant Central Podcast. You can find us all on Twitter. That's the best place to reach us. We're all very friendly. We will talk to anybody. Duan is at Collect Valiant. Travis is at The Great Magnet. I am a Geek Vine, and the show is at Valiant_Central. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks.